Storyworthy Media, the best in story-driven content.
Hello, it's Wendy McClendon Covey.
Hey, this is Kevin Allison of the Risk Podcast, and I'm getting risky on Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannah Spinney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannah Spinney, and this is a best of Storyworthy.
You know, Hannah, I got to tell you something. Our best of shows are getting better and better.
They are.
And why do you think that is?
Because we have a bigger pool of better stories to choose from to best of.
You are all absolutely right.
Truth be told, people, if you look at your first best ofs, they may be the best of something that wasn't the best in the first place. If you see what I'm saying, it's like,
well,
but
listen.
Now we're like, you know, bringing up tonight, we have two big people, Wendy McClendon Covey and Kevin Allison. And last time we had Bobcat Goldthwait and Pauly Shore.
Yeah.
These are quality stories from quality people.
But listen, Hannes, everything starts from zero. When you start a new show like Storyworthy,
yes.
Now this summer we'll be going 6 years.
Six years.
But when you start at zero.
We may have started at a negative number, I believe. We were like in your old apartment, not even the previous apartment that we recorded in.
Yeah.
And there was like glass everywhere and sound and yeah. So no, we've come a long way, people.
What do you mean there was glass everywhere? What does that mean?
I believe there was a lot of glass in that room.
And oh, in other words,
reflecting sound back, like
right.
Vibrating.
That's true. It was like my old apartment, and it was like.
Welcome to Storyworthy.
No, but it was. Yeah, you're right. It was like it was ceiling to floor glass.
Yeah, it still sounded better than half the podcasts out there.
Yeah,
let's
true.
Throw a little, as the kids say, let's throw a little shade on the podcast that people record with one microphone while they're driving 100 miles an hour down the field. My God, you guys are so authentic. Yeah. Yeah.
So tonight, you guys, it's the best of confusing sexuality. Confusing
right.
sexuality with, like you said, Wendy McClendon Covey and also Kevin Allison.
Yes. I think, by the way, you know, most people, I think all sexuality is confusing, but we have to point out that this is exceptionally confusing
right.
sexuality.
Right. Well, their stories are exceptional.
Yes.
But I got to tell you, Hannes, I mean, for me, sex was extremely confusing because nobody told me anything.
Yes.
I had four older sisters and an older brother, and somehow my mom thought that the information would trickle down to me.
Yeah.
And it did not.
Yeah. I think her problem with her is she didn't realize she raised a bunch of Catholics.
Yeah.
So they're not going to tell you. It doesn't make sense. You had four older sisters. You should have gotten information. There should have been one of those sisters who went, I want to make sure that my now 15-year-old sister is not going to get in trouble, blah, blah, blah. You know,
well, you have to understand they all left, you know, they were all gone. They went to college.
Yeah.
So I just wasn't given information. And like, I remember seeing like maxi pads and I would see pads and tampons in the bathroom. So
yeah.
I knew there was something coming,
yeah.
you know, but I didn't
yeah.
understand the whole way it went down.
She didn't even get around to that.
No, not at all. Now, no, my older sister, I remember a package came in the mail and it had like a woman running through wheat on the cover.
Sure.
And my mother took my sister Tracy back to the back bedroom and they had a talk.
Yeah.
But I was not included. I was not privy to that information. I sat out in the other room watching the Partridge Family.
Right.
And this is my education.
Yes. Yeah. Partridge Family. That woman had 35 kids and never had a husband, as far as I could tell. I don't know what.
I think the premise was Shirley Jones, who, by the way, you're in love with.
I am in love with still.
And, you know, her husband recently passed, Marty Ingalls.
Oh,
so.
Did he? I didn't notice that. Oh, that sucks.
But now you're married.
You no. See? It's just like George Costanza with Maria. No, whatever that. Yeah, never mind.
Marissa
we'll
Tomei.
That. Marissa Tomei. Yeah, it's like it just. Missed it by that much.
Yeah, just that much. What were we talking about now?
Partridge Family. By the way, this will not be appearing in any future best of episode. this conversation that's here's going
what I was
nowhere.
Say. Okay, here's what I knew about sex. My older sister Karen told me, I kid you not, she told me that boys have a hot dog and they put their hot dog in your bun. That's what she told me. That was my information going in. Now, I did learn some stuff from health class. I'll say that.
Yeah.
They ran some stuff by us. There was a video. They separated the boys from the girls, of course.
Yeah,
and I remember this one teacher, Mr. Salisbury, saying like, all right, boys and girls, this is, you know, the part we're going to talk about, you know, sex and reproduction. And I'm just going to start saying these words and you can just start laughing and get it out. Vagina, vagina, penis, penis. And we laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed. And then I think we had to break for lunch. And then we came back.
Still laughing.
And still laughing. And it
well, I'm, no, I think that
I'm
was actually
40 years later.
That was a pretty good, that was pretty good. Start on his point. It's like you can't come at it with kids like this is very serious because it's just gonna make it worse. Like being in church, you gotta make it worse if you're not like, I know where. I wonder if kids, I don't know, they probably aren't getting any information now.
Well, but, my daughter told me last week in health class that she learned that girls start puberty at 10 and boys start puberty at 12. And then she started going like, na, 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 like she was lucky.
Like she was
like
winning.
Girls
yeah.
rule. Yeah.
Yes.
Because we start at 10 or 11.
See, again, when I was listening to these to pull out the stories, there was something I said that I think I would say again, which is our real problem of the fact that we're supposed to live till 30. Mm-hmm. Genetically, biologically, we're cave people.
Yeah.
And, you know, girls are supposed to get pregnant when they're 11 years old because they're going to be dead at 30. So they need, you know, they need to have a child and be able to raise it
to
a full age of 11. No, but yes, but our sexuality has not evolved.
I see what you're saying.
We have not evolved. If we'd evolved with us, then girls would be incapable of getting pregnant until they were, say, 18 years old. But some girls can get pregnant at 10, 11, 12 years old.
I have sexually evolved for sure because I like sex now more than ever. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Well, you're unloading all the guilt and you have the information.
And that's what I want to tell my daughter. Here's the thing with sex is it's not just about procreating, obviously.
Yeah.
People do it because it feels good. That's why they do it. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's just that you have to understand that boys specifically are going to want to do that, but that doesn't mean you say it's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Just because somebody wants something doesn't mean you give that to them.
Right, exactly. And you have to be your own person and you have to like, you know, be around a boy who likes you for some other reason besides that.
Yeah. And
that can't be the only reason he's
hanging around. Think it out before you see him, before you go to a party. Think it out. This is going to happen. So, you know, these situations are going to arise where you're going to have to say no and you're going to have to say stop. So think about it before you get into the situation. I'm just trying to think what could have helped me when I was a kid. You know what I mean?
No, exactly.
Because like, number one, don't go into a bedroom with a boy at a party. Don't do that.
Yeah. Don't.
Never do that.
Don't do that. Or at the very least, be aware of any situation that could arise. Yeah. I mean, these abstinence only people are still trying to tell kids they're like, sex is only for procreation, which is just an out and out lie.
Yeah.
The reason, I mean, again, evolution, the reason sex feels so good is that's nature trying to make you make babies.
Yeah.
But so now we've got to the point where we can have the fun part without having the baby part.
Well, for sure. But, I mean, I'm in menopause, so I don't even have periods anymore.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Storyworthy.
Talk about confusing sexuality.
No, but I'm just saying, like, so I can't have babies.
Yeah.
But I want to have sex, so I just blew somebody on Ballbusters too. That's not true.
That fine French video
that we dubbed.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm just saying that I busted your theory. That's all I'm saying.
No. But also, it's like, yeah, we still want to, but it's like, it's ingrained in us because we need to breed. So it's like other species don't have the mental wherewithal to figure out a way to have sex without the possibility of impregnation. Monkeys and donkeys and horses can't, they're like going to have sex when they're, you know, and that actually it's very smart because some species are just, they never have sex unless they're in heat. Right. Like cats, if they're in heat, they can have sex and they can have a baby.
Right.
And then the rest of the year, no interest in sex. And they're not giving off a pheromone that makes a male
cat want to have sex. That's every month for a cat. It's not every year.
Well, I haven't had a lot of sex with cats. All the cats I know are fixed, so I'm
Ladies
really not up on my cat period.
You have tuned into a great episode of Storyworthy.
All evidence notwithstanding.
Because these are two fantastic stories coming up. And the first is by the one and only Wendy McClendon Covey, who was not only an amazing storyteller, but just a wonderful, wonderful girl.
Wonderful person.
All right, you guys. But before we bring on our first storyteller, I did want to remind you that if you'd like to support Storyworthy, that would be great. There's just a few things you can do. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Instagram at Storyworthy.
Right. And if you have iTunes, just go ahead and subscribe to us on iTunes.
Yeah, that's a great thing to do. And rate us and leave us a review.
Leave us a review.
That yes. always helps. Yes. Absolutely. All right, you guys. Here comes Wendy McClendon Covey right now. She is an actress and a writer and a producer and, of course, an improviser. You know her from Reno 911, Bridesmaids, and, of course, right now she's on The Goldbergs.
Bev. She's Bev Goldberg.
She's the smother on
she's
Goldberg.
She's the smother. She's fantastic.
Absolutely one of my very favorite shows on television. And I'm so excited that she could come on Storyworthy and share her story. You guys can find her on Twitter at Wendy McClendon Co. So it's WendyMcLendonCo. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Wendy McClendon Covey.
Thank you. Thank you for that warm welcome. And what a great setup, because you mentioned that your daughter is here and that she's 8 years old. Okay. Way too young to know about any of this stuff. But that's when I had to have the talk, because I had come home from school with such terrible information. My mom had to set me straight because she knew I would go around telling everybody this terrible, terrible information. Now, because I was on Reno 911 and I played a lady with swagger, everyone assumes that I have lived the life of a wanton slut. No. I actually grew up in a very religious family, and I was so confused about what sex was until, well, never mind. It took me a long time to get it sorted out. And you don't need to know when that finally happened. Let's just stick to the topic. Okay, so third grade, and I went to a private Christian school, which I loved, by the way. I have no bad feelings about my private Christian school, but very odd that I would come home giggling, like laughing so hard to myself about this new knowledge. My mom said, "What are you laughing at?" "I know how babies are made." "Oh, really? How are they made?" "It's gross." "Oh, yeah? Well, tell me." "Well, the man and the lady take off their clothes and they each stand in a corner of the room. And then they keep running into each other and running into each other and crashing together until their butts hook." And my mom said, "Who told you this?" And then I think she probably had an angry phone call with that person's mother or whatever. Well, I don't know if you ever watched, I'm sure you did, A 40-Year-Old Virgin. I think that's... I think that's where this came from. But that story was also told in that movie. The kids came home and told that same story. So that validated me. Like, okay, I'm not crazy. That story was floating around for a while. Okay, my mom said, "No. No, that's not what happens. I guess I'm going to have to tell you what happens, but I don't want you going around telling people this. I don't know if other people, you know, that's up to people's parents to tell them." Okay. My mom is very, very concerned that she has to tell me this. So what does she do? She gets out a drawing pad and a pencil, and she draws something that looks like a banana or a boomerang. Or maybe a hook. That's why when people say, "Oh, we hooked up," that phrase skeeves me out so much, because I think of hooks going into places where hooks ought not go. But anyway, so she draws this thing, and I'm thinking, I don't like where this is going. And then she thinks better of it and tears it up. Okay, listen. This is what happens, Wendy. when a man and a woman are married, all right, that's the first thing she said. This only happens when a man and a woman are married. Sometimes the man's penis gets really, really hard, just like as hard as a rock. Very hard. Like you can't even believe it. It gets so hard. And he puts it in the lady. And then a seed goes from his body into her body. And then she is pregnant. Okay? That's it. And then 9 months later, a baby is born. Now, hearing that now, do you think there are a few holes in this story? Do you think there's some things that she left out? So I'm thinking, yuck, I'm never doing this. All I can think of, I'm trying to put this into context. Right away, my mind goes to America's parents, Ma and Pa Ingalls, on Little House on the Prairie. And I'm thinking about them wanting to have babies. And when Mary and Laura and Carrie are outside playing on the prairie, Ma and Pa Ingalls have some love time, all right? And what happens is they take off their clothes and they stand there facing each other and smiling. For some reason, his penis gets hard because that's what happens when you're married. And being married, that happens from time to time. He puts it in, and a seed comes out. I'm thinking a seed, what, the size of a walnut, a jelly bean, goes in. There's an audible pop, and then it's over. All right? And sexual intercourse has taken place. And then a baby happens. So that's why some people go around swearing on whatever that life begins at conception. Or, you know, because now that's how it's explained. The seed goes in and you're pregnant and there it is. All right. So I'm thinking, why would anyone do this? It's not fun. Is that the only... Okay, so that's just what happens to make babies. All right. So why do teenagers get pregnant? Why do they want to do that? And they're not married. So how does this dick get hard? What? So I asked my mom, how do teenagers get pregnant? Do they just like stuff it in? And my mom said, yes. And that was the end of that. So then, this is all horrible. I want nothing to do with this. I think I'm not having children because that sounds embarrassing. That doesn't sound fun. I don't like this. Gross. Okay. So then I go a snooping, as you are wont to do when you're 8 years old. I find some Playboys under my dad's boat magazines. Sorry, Dad, if you're listening to this. I guess you didn't know I knew you had those, huh? Well, anyway, there's all these naked chicks in there posing alluringly and all of this. And I'm like, well, what's this about? Why are they doing that? And by the way, what I'm taking from this is that anyone wearing a fur coat is automatically naked underneath. No matter where you go, because that's what I've seen. All right. Why are they doing that? They're like posing with their legs spread and like, ooh, I'm feeling things that I don't want. Like, why is this happening? And why are these magazines buried? Like, wait a minute. Am I supposed to grow up and do these things? Again, 8 years old. Then what else am I seeing? I'm seeing the Benny Hill Show. Okay, with just like naked, you know, like just shenanigans, Love American Style. We were always watching Love American Style or the Newlywed Game. They're talking about making whoopee. Well, what's that? What? None of this made any sense to me. I'm trying to piece all this stuff together. Then I went to my grandma's house. I had a good grandma and a bad grandma, and I went to bad grandma's house. At least one of my adult uncles still living there, and he had some interesting literature laying around. And of course, I had to look at it, you know, because it was gross. And I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, I'm having feelings that are so, I'm confused. I don't like what I'm seeing. I know I shouldn't be looking, but I have to look at this stuff. And it was absolutely medical. It was pretty perverted. And I'm pretty sure these people were French. And they were dressed in like partially nude space suits. And they were really doing something probing to a woman. Okay, that's all. That's all. I had nightmares about it. It wasn't good. But I didn't know what that was. But okay. So there's naked shenanigans that happen. And I figured out, okay, by the time I was in the sixth grade, I had kind of compartmentalized everything. And I thought, okay, sexual intercourse is only for procreation. That's how you knock up your wife. Making whoopee was just naked partying with a bunch of other perverts. Okay, but there might have been some booby squeezing or like, you know, dick wagging, but it wasn't like there was no sexual intercourse. It was just naked naughtiness. Making love was naked kissing under the covers in bed. Okay. Like on soap operas, which I was also not supposed to watch. And making out was endless kissing in a car, like on happy days when they would go to Inspiration Point and they would make out in the back seat. I truly thought that that was the end game to getting in the back seat with someone, was just endless clothed kissing. Guess what? I was wrong. So anyway, when I hit puberty, such a gross word for a gross time, my mother, she got me a series of tapes to listen to from Dr. James Dobson called Preparing for Adolescence. And he, you know, say what you want to about this guy. But one thing he said was that sexual intercourse, when this happens, both people kind of move around until there's a tingly feeling. Oh, wait, what? What? A tingly feeling? Is that why people? Wait, tingly feeling? You mean when the seed comes out? Now, is this like tingling like when your foot falls asleep, like bad tingling? Or is it good tingling like when your mom braids your hair? We like this or we don't like it, or it's just something that happens. Okay, that's weird. But that was like another piece to the puzzle. Then as I started growing up and girls I knew started getting pregnant, I'm thinking, I know what you're doing. You're doing that stand-up thing. And you're forcing that limp dick in there because they only get hard when they're married, as my mother explained. Why are you doing this? That was the most perplexing thing to me, was like, you're not using birth control and you're doing that. Why are you doing that? I just don't understand. Okay, well, I've said that enough times. But you can understand why that would be confusing to me. If that's really what I thought getting pregnant was, yeah, why would anyone just stand there for that? Okay, so... needless to say, look, 45 years old now. I've figured some things out, all right? Just rest assured, listeners out there, I've figured some things out. I do know now what all of this is, all right? But it didn't help that, and I don't know if this is just a religious thing or a laziness thing, thinking, because a lot of adults don't explain to their children what sex really is and all the do's and don'ts and machinations of this. I wonder if it was just a religious thing, like, look, if we don't let them know everything about it, they'll be just confused enough to not try anything. Well, how does that work out? Not very well, does it? Well, needless to say, through TV and movies and books and my friends, we all kind of filled each other in, and things were you know, sort it out. But then I heard the term blowjob, and all that stuff, all the confusion came up again. And I'm thinking, oh, there's blowing. I don't understand. Anyway, thank you for your time.
And we're back. Oh, what a fine story. So much humorous confusion going on with all of the sexuality there.
Well, a lot of it, again, is the religion thing.
Right. Although I remember at the time realizing that my parents were not religious at all, and yet I still got no information.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what it was that's like, they just weren't paying that much attention. I don't know. I guess her mother just didn't want to give her the info.
And also, it was maybe our era. You know, when I grew up, when you grew up, Hannes, we weren't, kids were like seen but not heard from. You know, we were definitely not, parents weren't nearly as involved like now. I mean, now, everybody at my daughter's school is, all the parents are very involved.
Especially the nannies, Guadalupe, and exactly. It is paying. I mean, now, of course, we've gone to the other extreme. There are these helicopter parents who are, you know, going completely insane with every moment of their kids' lives.
Yeah.
But, you know, eventually, hopefully, we hit some sort of middle ground.
I already asked you this, but do you watch The Goldbergs?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so you know, my nephew is a wardrobe stylist on that show.
That's true.
Or a costume designer. And he brought my daughter, Alabama, one of those gym outfits that the kids wear, the yellow
t-shirt. Oh, really? Oh, no.
That says William Penn Academy. And the,
oh, no, I didn't
and
know
the
that.
Blue shorts with the tall tube socks, the exact uniform they wear in the show. And my daughter loves it beyond belief. She wears it day after day after day. It's quite
fantastic.
Quite funny, yeah. Actually, you know, the other day I said, Alabama, you can't wear that to school today. Because you wore it the previous 2 days. I'm going to wash it today, and then you can wear it the next 2 days.
Yeah.
She goes in her room. She changes. And then I take her to school. I drop her off at school. And when I picked her up at 2:35, she was wearing that yellow shirt.
She took it to work with her.
She took it to school. And I said, Alabama, what are you doing in that shirt? And her face just got so red. I'm like, I can't believe you did that. So where did you change? And she said, the bathroom. So she's 9 years old and changing her clothes in the bathroom.
Sneaking to work. And see, she knew you weren't actually going to wash it that day. She knew you were full
of
crap.
No, I was. I did laundry that day.
But you didn't notice that the shirt wasn't there?
I did notice that the shirt wasn't there, but I couldn't do anything about it. I still did the laundry. Mm-hmm. By the way, that is the day that I was doing two loads of laundry, okay? I poured the detergent into both machines. I put the laundry in, and by the way, I poured all the detergent out, and I thought to myself, you know, this detergent sucks. I've been washing my clothes with this for a couple months now, and my clothes are not that clean. And, you know, I look at the jug, and I realize it's fabric softener.
You've been washing with fabric softener for a month?
No, 3 months.
I did see you put this up on Facebook and received righteously tremendous ridicule. From people.
I have never been good at laundry, and I'm not proud of it, but this was a milestone.
That's not being good at laundry. That's being good at reading English.
I don't know why. Because it said free and clear, and, you know, I don't like chemicals and stuff, right? So those are my laundry buzzwords.
The fabric softener and the detergent always come in bottles that look the same, so you can pair them up. It's because, God forbid, you have a different fabric softener with some other.
I have no idea what you just said. I'm just saying.
Fabric softener is one of those bullshit things people come up with. I've never used fabric softener in my life.
I never have either, except that I have been for the last 3 months.
You don't? Okay. You're going to have to learn
it's
to be
upsetting. I sort of want to cry a little bit because I want
to see you cry because your child has been going to work smelling like a flowery Armenian man. Her clothes stink, but yet she has some sort of mountain fresh scent.
There was no scent to it. It's free and clear. Those were the buzzwords, and it's
so basically you've been rinsing your clothes for 3 months.
Yeah, it's upsetting. Anyway, I'm never going to buy it again. And I did get detergent, and the clothes do seem a bit brighter, whiter, and fresher. All right, you guys, we've got our next storyteller on right now.
It was like far afield from sexuality, right there, Elvison.
Kevin Allison, he is such a talented guy. He's an actor and a writer and the host and creator of the Risk Podcast. By the way, the Risk Podcast now is in every city in America.
Like physically, they are doing shows.
Yes, he's got people in every, you know, probably 10 different cities doing producing the shows? Why aren't we doing that, Hannes?
I don't know. Is he paying these people? Is he franchising? Well,
In other cities, you can pay, people will pay $15, $20 for a ticket to see a show.
Oh, not here, though.
No, not here. Will pay five or eight, maybe 10. But in other cities, people pay a lot more money for shows. And so Kevin has been able to take risk to another level, and he's got a lot of live shows going on. Anyway, it's all very exciting. You can find Kevin over on Twitter at The Kevin Allison. That's two L's, The Kevin Allison. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Kevin Allison.
Thank you so much. I did grow up in Cincinnati, Ohio. And, you know, psychologists will sometimes say that if you can nail down, if you can zero in on your first memory, it's probably significant. It's probably like almost like thinking of a dream because it's stuck there rumbling around in your head, and it must have some emotional weight for you. And I remember very clearly what my first, I think, conscious thought is that I can recall. I'm about 3 years old, somewhere between three and four, and I'm crawling around on the dining room rug looking at the little shag fibers in the rug and the dust motes coming through the light, coming through the window. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, I really like boys' butts. And that has been pretty much every other thought that I've had since that afternoon. The thing of it is, you were absolutely right. Cincinnati is the most conservative city north of the Mason-Dixon line. And it has an obsession with sex. The Mapplethorpe trials were there. The Larry Flint trials were there. In Cincinnati, it's not like homosexuality doesn't exist. It's like sexuality doesn't exist. I'm not sure how the town reproduces, but anyway, I grew up super, super, super aware that I was gay. It was right in the forefront of my consciousness, but I couldn't express it or experiment with it until I left Cincinnati at the age of 18 and went to New York City. Now, I went to NYU to study film, and there was a gay bar in the East Village, about 10 blocks from NYU. It's called the Boiler Room, and it's where all the young guys from NYU would hang out. And when I first started hanging out at these kinds of bars, I was so intimidated because it had never occurred to me. I was so scared of games like Risk and Monopoly and soccer and baseball and football and all of that when I was a kid, because there was all that heterosexual male competition in those things. So when I first stepped into a gay bar, I'm like, oh no, there's all this male competition in the room that I just hadn't anticipated that cruising would be such a intimidating thing. So I became very much of a wallflower when I first started hanging out at gay bars. I just remember this one night, I'm having a beer with some friends at the Boiler Room, and I say to a friend, you know, I really want to get laid tonight, but I don't want to have to start a conversation. And he said, oh, well, you're in luck, because there's this place right across the street that the Rolling Stones used to own. It was this basement where they'd go to escape from the rest of the city so that no one would know where they were. But now it's a sex club. And you go over there, and what you'll find is this really dark, kind of creepy alley. And there's a door there that looks like it's to a condemned building. But if you really push on that door, it's got the number 82 spray painted on it. It'll creak open, and then you go down one flight of stairs and another flight of stairs and another flight of stairs, and there's a little guy. There's like a dwarf or a midget kind of guy down there, and if you give him $10, he'll let you in, and you walk in, and it's a sex club. It's all dudes having sex with dudes, and the best part is it's mostly guys from NYU because they're all coming from across the street from this bar. So you don't have to worry so much about, you know, running into too many guys who look like Santa Claus in assless chaps or the way I look today in 2014. So I said to my friend, well, what am I thinking? You know, compared to standing here drinking this beer, that sounds like a much more efficient way to go about this. So I go across the street, and it's exactly like he says. There's the creepy alleyway, the door with the number 82 spray painted on it. It creaks open. I go down one flight of stairs and another, and there's the little dude. And I give him my $10, and he lets me in, and I'm instantly enveloped in clouds of smoke. You could smoke in New York City in those days. And I realized right away, it was a maze. This place was designed with snaking hallways going left, right, all around. You could very easily get lost, but along every hallway were these little doors for these closet-sized rooms. And what guys would do is they'd stand in the doorway, kind of leaning up against it sexily, and if you walk past and you like him and he likes you, you nod at each other, then you go into his little room and you have a grand old time. Now, I had just studied in film school the week previously the film Seven Samurai by Akira Kurosawa. See, I was studying film at NYU, and our professor had said, I'm going to show you guys a movie today. It's one of the 10 greatest films ever made. There's so much to get out of this movie. So we watched it, and what I got out of the movie was that in the second half, Toshiro Mifune, the main samurai guy, is wearing almost nothing but what kind of looks like a diaper, and he looked great. So this just kind of lit up this new interest in my head, this vision of a samurai that I wanted to have some fun with. So here I am walking around and with all that social anxiety, you know, with all that competition of men and cruising and all that, I found that I just didn't feel sexy enough. I didn't feel like I had the prowess. So a guy who felt like me could spend a lot of time walking around and around that maze, getting a lot of exercise at 4 o'clock in the morning. But at a certain point, I walk past a little door, and it's kind of shadowy. I'm like, is anyone in that room? I look a little bit closer, and yeah, I look in, and I see there's this fierce pair of Asian eyes in there. And he's kind of nodding at me, and I look closer, and then I notice he's got a ponytail sticking straight up like a samurai. I thought, oh, my God, if he doesn't, you know, drive a machete through me, then I just hit the jackpot. So I jump on in, but then my brain does a real quick split second thinking, oh, wait a minute, Kevin. You've never done this before. No one's given you any tips on safety. You don't know the typical protocol at a sex club. What is the safest way to start this conversation? So I found myself just blurting out to him, let's just go back to my place. So we walk up one flight of stairs and another flight of stairs and another flight of stairs, and now we're in the lamplight outside, and I can see, oh no. This is not a samurai. He's a little guy with a big beaky nose, and he's doing a lot of sniffling and shivering like he might be on something. And I thought to myself, geez, you know, I'm from Ohio. I don't know how to be impolite and, like, cut things off. I mean, what am I going to say? Oh, my gosh, I have an appointment with the nighttime dentist I forgot about. So instead, I just said, what's your name? And he said, Ham. And I said, Ham? He said, no, Ham. I said, Ham. He said, no, Ham. He was not a chipper guy. I thought, geez, Kev, the last thing you should do is actually take this guy home with you. So we get back to my place. And as we're walking in, I'm thinking, all right, what should I do now? Maybe turn on some Miles Davis, light some candles. But no, as soon as we walk in the door and it closes behind us, Ham goes into command mode. He says, stand over there. I said, excuse me? He said, stand over there. And I thought, oh my gosh, maybe this is this thing I've heard about that they call dominance and submission. Maybe I'm supposed to just yes and all this. And kind of go with the flow like an actor and see what happens. So I figured, well, I mean, that's easier than saying no because, you know, I'm from Ohio. So I stood over there. And then he's looking at me and he says, take off your clothes. And I said, Ham, do you think we can keep it down a little bit? He said, take off your clothes. So I took off all my clothes. And now I'm making excuses. I'm thinking, well, maybe today I'll kind of see the light. I'll have a sort of euphoric eureka moment and realize the joy of dominance and submission. So let's just, you know, go all out and see what happens. Now I'm naked and he's studying me still. And then he really lays it on me. He says, put the shoes on your balls. I said, pardon me? He said, tie the shoes to your balls. He's acting like, how'd this guy get this far in life without learning how to tie shoes to his balls? He had to show me what he meant. He wanted me to tie the laces together of my Converse sneakers so that, you know, the same way people would do if they were going to throw them over a telephone wire. And then he wanted me to take this contraption and wrap it kind of like a propeller around my balls so that the shoes would end up dangling at my shins. Well, at this point, I'm so curious as to where the fuck this could be going next that I did what he said. Now I'm feeling very, very pinched, you know, because Converse, I mean, I had these, the most heavy arch supports in there that money could buy. Converse are not good for your feet. And now I'm learning they're also not all that great for your balls. So I'm standing there like a cowboy because I'm all bow-legged and I'm thinking, all right, Ham, let's get to the next part of the play here as quickly as possible. Then he takes down his pants. He's still standing at the door, like 12 feet away on the other side of the room. And he just starts masturbating like a madman. He's just having me stand there and he's just like, whacking off. He's getting all red in the face and sweaty and just going crazy. And I thought, oh my gosh, well, this might be over pretty soon because he appears to be the world's fastest masturbator. But I had nothing to do. So after a while, you know, I mean, I think he was on something, and sometimes that means it might take a while. After a while, I just thought, well, why don't I initiate where this could go next? So I said, Ham, do you think we might want to move to the bedroom or something? And he got really angry, and he said, what's your problem? You look great. I thought, well, all right, I may be some sort of fashion statement for the future, but I don't know. I don't feel all that great. And he just goes on and on and on. And again, I think, well, maybe if I approach him, that'll work. So I start to approach him, and I'm like, hey, how's it going? And he's like, oh, but come on. You're screwing this all up. What, you've got some sort of problem. You don't think you look great? He kept coming back at me with these two arguments. I had a problem. I look great. And finally, I just started getting heated with him. We were arguing back and forth, and he just would not stop. So now I'm like, okay, it's time for a little dominance on your part, Kevin. I picked up his jacket, and I threw it out in the hallway. I was done. I was surprised at myself for being so bold. And then he was just deflated. I had totally ruined his big shoes on balls plans for the evening. He went out in the hallway and got his jacket, started getting dressed again. And he was kind of like a politician on election day, just trying to get that point across one last time. He said, I don't know what your problem is. You look great. And I said, Ham, thanks so much. It just wasn't working for me. So I let him out. But you know what? As I'm leaving him out, I turn around, and I had forgotten I had brought a full-size mirror from Ludlow Street. This was before the whole bed bug epidemic, where basically my entire apartment was furnished from Ludlow Street. And I turn around, and I see myself in this full-length mirror. And for the first time, I see what I look like. I'm completely nude, except for my shoes. And I think, wow, you know, Ham might have been psychotic, but he had one thing right. I look great.
Oh. And we're back. Oh, you know, it's been too long since somebody's told me to tie my shoes to my balls.
That image has never left my mind either.
No.
And I've been thinking about that for like 2 years since we had him on the show the first time. And here we go again.
Yeah.
Thanks for refreshing that in my mind.
Yeah, it had to come back. I don't know. I still can't figure out exactly what that was supposed to do.
Well, I think there's at that point when you've done so many things sexually and you have to kind of keep amping it up and adding more to the experience, that pain comes naturally because it's similar to pleasure in that it sparks certain.
No. I get that.
Okay. So that's part of it. How much more?
Right,
what would hurt more than tying a pair of Converses to your balls? What would hurt more?
Tying a pair of large boots that are much heavier. No, I get the whole pain thing. I get people are like, oh, they want to be spanked or they want to be tied up. I get that. It's like, but the shoes are so specific. He didn't say, hey, bend over, I'm going to spank you.
Okay.
Which I think even at that age, Kevin Morgan, okay, well, I've heard about this. He's like, tie your shoes to your balls is so, like, I guess it's just like, I can make you do anything.
I love Kevin. I just love this
guy.
I
don't know. But I do remember thinking at the time, it was like the whole sex maze in the basement.
Yeah.
It's like, you take women out of it. This is what men would do.
I guess.
Just wander around and be like, would you like to have random sex with me in a sex maze? Except, see, again, they left the sex maze. If they hadn't left the sex maze, everything would have been fine.
I said that to him when we interviewed him the first time.
Yeah.
We're taking a major chance taking this stranger into your apartment.
Yeah, you could have ended up with your shoes tied to your ball.
And by the way, Kevin is the one who grew up Catholic and in Cincinnati, Ohio, which was similar to my upbringing.
Yes, he did. Yes,
because,
he was very.
Because Wendy grew up in Long Beach, California, where she still lives. But Kevin is more from where I am.
Yeah. And she lived in the L.A. Television area and yet still had no sexual information. Amazing.
I don't think that has anything to do with it whatsoever.
Well, not anymore. No. Back in my day.
All right, you guys. Well, listen, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to a Best of Storyworthy. We'll be back next month with another Best of Storyworthy.
Yes.
We do it once a month. Have you noticed that, Hannes?
We do. I have noticed that, yes.
Because you're the one that puts them together.
Yes, once a month.
That's right. So why don't you write to us, folks, at info@storyworthypodcast.com. Tell us how much you love these Best of episodes.
Maybe give us a suggestion. What do you want?
What do you want
to hear?
Tell
us about a pairing that you want to do.
There we go.
You know what? If you put together a good pair, we'll give you credit on the air.
That's a great idea.
Because frankly, it's the hardest thing. It's like you find the one you want and you're like, I got to scroll through and find what could possibly fit in with this.
Yeah.
You know, and drugs are obviously easy because there's like a million. We have a million drug and drunk stories. And
that's our audience.
Yeah, that's it. We have some sex stories. But every once in a while, somebody will tell a story that's unique and wonderful and is impossible to put in a best of because it's like, I got nothing to pair this with.
Why don't we pair it with the best of unique and wonderful?
Wow.
Write that down.
Okay, hang on. I'm writing it down.
All right, you guys, I want to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network today, including our sound guy, Avery Pearson. Thanks, Avery.
He's waving.
You forgot to turn the clock on, by the way. Other than that, it's been a perfect recording.
It's been fantastic. You go in the corner and tie your shoes to your balls.
And on behalf of Sean Merrick and Roddy Swearingen, and of course, John Thomas Griffith, you know, he wrote the theme song, Follow Me.
He did, and he was wearing Converse.
And also like to thank our amazing storytellers again tonight, Wendy McClendon Covey and Kevin Allison.
Yay.
And on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
Hi, I'm Quen.
And I'm Dev.
And together we make Mouth Time, a podcast by Reductress.
You know us from amazing articles such as How to Be a Lady in the Streets and a Haunted Clock Tower in the Sheets.
And Childless Women. Are they safe?
We are the only podcast made by women that women are allowed to listen to.
Yeah, no one's telling you you can't.
We love covering things that you love hearing about, like drugs, snakes, and punching yourself in the mouth till you pass out. You know, lady stuff.
You know, shopping, horses, hair ties, lady stuff. We have new episodes every Wednesday.
Find us on iTunes, SideshowNetwork.tv, and anywhere else you can find podcasts, including The Mouth of a Snake that you don't know if it's a dream or real or a ghost.
Honestly, check it out. There might be a podcast in there.
There might be.
Bye.